just the tremendous, the tremendous pride that I feel in seeing, really all of you have been in NYU for, you know, a semester, a year and a half. Really able to see tremendous growth in really all of you in a lot of ways, even though sometimes yourself, you see yourself struggling or you see yourself not accomplishing the way that you want. But in so many ways, just to sort of see this chevra of guys, and it's a tremendous, tremendous source of nachas, and I hope that on some level you feel that about yourself as well. I want to maybe discuss something. I know that, I don't know, I guess Rav Shai usually does halacha now. And okay, so I hear between halacha and Rabbi Elazar's lamdas, so you're having a certain amount of, I guess, those classical areas. I want to speak about something that was on my mind the last few days, and I hope it's something that is nogeya to you guys as well, for those who are not here. I think you often ask a person who, let's say, they start to date, right? No one here is married or engaged. Morty didn't show up, but you can think of how Morty missed him when he comes in. You know, you start asking yourself, like, what is it that I'm looking in a person? And a person could say, I'm looking for a person who is, fill in the blank, growth-oriented, kind-hearted, someone who I'm attracted to, someone who has a good future, someone, I mean, all those things. And I'm not sure if, let's say, the first question the person asks themselves is, am I simply, like, happy to be around that person? Like, it's not always sort of something like the cheshbon a person is making. Like, do I enjoy being in their presence? Do I see that person as a person I just enjoy speaking to and look forward to speaking to? And it's almost as though, like, people sort of forget that that's, like, the essence of, like, a relation with a person. You know, you can make life as complicated. You can make life as complicated as you want. At the end of the day, it's about just, like, enjoying spending, you know, 60, 70 years with a person, and I hope that in your own parents' marriage, I hope in your own future marriage, like, that's really the focus, even before religiosity, anything else. I think sometimes in Avodas Hashem, or in life also, you know, this idea of just finding simcha, this finding happiness, and being happy with yourself, being happy being a Jew, it's almost like overlooked. You know, you pick a yeshiva where this might be there, or that might be there, or you pick a place, and it's almost like, am I happy as a person? And I think all of you are sophisticated enough to understand that if you're not happy as a person, it's like nothing else matters. You know, when the Gemara talks about davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the Gemara realizes in the beginning of the fifth parak in Brachos that if a person is angry, if a person is depressed, if a person is not happy, if a person is in a fight, like, you simply can't daven. Like, one part of your life can't become, like, disconnected from another part of your life. Unless you're in a good place, unless you're, like, benachas, so then nothing else can exist. And if you're not happy, so then usually your relationships suffer, usually your family life suffers. For sure, your learning suffers, your adopting suffers, your schoolwork, your sense of future. Like, everything sort of revolves around, like, that inner point of your life of happiness. And I wonder if there's, like, enough attention paid for the yeshiva overall, people individually, of just, like, how do I become just, like, a happier person, a person who's more benachas? One of the many, many things I love about Yadus, this is sort of a side note, but I usually, probably a few times a week, I speak to guys in NYU who are either not from, thinking about not being from. They have questions about Torah Shvel Peh, they have questions about Mesorah, they have questions about Hashkacha. And, you know, I don't go to class in the afternoon, but when I hear, you see guys showing up to class, you know, with that yarmulkes on, which to me is somewhat, you guys ever see this? Guys, that yarmulkes, to me, is, like, very, I don't know, disrespectful and immature to show up to class and want you with that yarmulke, but that's very sort of like a different story. You get a lot of people in the world who aren't from, but when they go to a place and they realize that certain things are appropriate, so then you sort of have enough respect for that place and respect for yourself. But, you know, the conversation I had with someone yesterday was, okay, fine, just, why don't you table the fact that you have an issue with X, Y, and Z, or you lack faith in this area, and just maybe focus on the areas that you genuinely do think are there. You know, family, community, the fact that the mitzvahs are supposed to elevate us, the fact that there is a sort of inspiration. I mean, all this, so why don't you focus on that? And one of the many, many things, even when I have, you know, my own moments of challenge, that I love about Yahadus is that they really point you in the direction of psychological health. You know, if, even for instance, you take the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, and the Mishnah says, Ezu Ashir, you know, who's wealthy. So the world might think in general, who's wealthy? You know, it's the guy with the, my son was telling me this morning, my 10-year-old, about the person in our shul. He has like 6 cars on his driveway, and he has a Mercedes convertible, so of course now he's my 10-year-old's like new hero. Can't believe this person is, you know, that's sort of the way that the world measures wealth. And of course, we know that a person who's wealthy, it's Sameach B'chelko. A person who's a Gibor is Kovish, is Yitzro. What Chazal is doing thousands of years ago is pointing to the fact that the evaluations that people often try to access through outer things, through strength and through the gym and through bravery or through money, often are usually found internally. Chazal is telling us, like, work out your internal life. And that's true by Simcha as well. You know, there are many people that I know. I'm a rav of a shul where Joe and Benji's brother davens. And the average person in our shul is probably, let's say, like 45, 46, 47. And usually at a certain stage of life, you know, people start getting a little bit older. Their kids are starting to graduate high school. They start to lose their hair. And what's the next thing that happens in a community like mine that's like a relatively affluent community? Anybody know the next step? Convertible. There you go. And then the guy always pulls up the shul in like a Mazda convertible. And I'm like, oh my goodness, like, just give me a break. Or the guy decides to get a hair weave. Or the guy this. Or Chas V'Shalom, the person leaves their wife. And like, it's like this pursuit of, you know, things in their life that's going to make them, you know, happy. And it's completely against, you know, our mindset, our mentality. And they devalue happiness, and then happiness coming internally. So I want to maybe just in the next few minutes, and we only have until about, you know, 10, 6, 20, 25 minutes, maybe share, and obviously a lot of these things come from Chazal and from the Rishonim, but really from my own life as well. I'm 42, but 21 doesn't feel very long ago. All of a sudden you wake up one day and a good part of your life has gone by. I was just looking at Rabbi Sobolovsky yesterday. So my daughter, Grislovsky's daughter, were born the same week in 1996 here in Washington Heights. They learned how to walk together in the same place in Amsterdam Avenue. And now already his daughter, not mine, she's a little more mature, they're already starting to ask her about Shaduchim. And like, almost like you turn around and a good part of your life is over, half your life is over, which is not a bad thing. But sort of putting myself back a little bit in some of the challenges that I certainly faced, and I imagine many of you faced as well at this stage of life. Now, before saying that, I would say that there are things about being 20, 21, 22 that, like, you'll never have ever again in your life. I hope it's something that you guys appreciate. I was speaking to Noah yesterday, and your brother, I think it's fair to say that he's probably the most, like, disgustingly upbeat, optimistic person. Oh, it's great, everything's great, you know, this guy spit in my face, oh, it's great, Baruch Hashem, like, you know, so, but Noah's, like, major taina in general, which I'm sure you've heard before, is, like, people should not go through life complaining and being negative, like, appreciate the life that you have now, and I would definitely encourage you to do that also. I miss, even now, years later, the days of just, like, being here for Night Seder, and then afterwards going to the jacuzzi at midnight, and then hanging out in, like, in your friend's room for 2 hours in your dorm. I mean, those are sort of the experiences that literally, you never get back in life. Just, like, the chevra and the hanging out and the base medrash and the free time and the gym, all these things are just, so I hope you appreciate it and don't spend your life complaining about sort of negativity. Like, on the other hand, thanks for showing up. So on the other hand, you know, there's so much about life that gets better, and as far as, like, personal happiness, I think the average person is probably a lot happier at 45 than they are at 21. I don't know how you guys feel, but at 21, often there's so much personal anxiety and uncertainty about future and where am I going to be, what difference am I going to make, and am I accomplishing anything, and I'm a nobody compared to this person. And sometimes life moves on and it's easier just to feel like a certain happiness. And so, as I said, I just want to maybe touch on five different areas. And I really encourage all of you, or any of you, at any point, you know, today or future weeks or months or years, if you feel that any of these areas are worth, you know, picking up on, to certainly feel free to bring them to me. I guess in no specific order, probably the major impetus for unhappiness, and it's probably mostly true, probably around the ages of, let's say, 15 and 24, like a throw of random numbers, but it could be true later, is really sort of the insecurity that comes in life. And, you know, again, I was in high school before, and that insecurity is probably most felt in high school, in yeshiva, definitely. And it's not as though if you go to Lakewood, if you go to Bris, or if you go to Kerem Yavner or YU, it's going to be any less in a college setting. And a person goes through life, and they just sort of feel like, what sort of distinguishes me from anybody else? And I go through high school, there's a guy who's much better at sports, he's much smarter, he's much more popular, the girls like him, which is not a small thing. And it's often the same person for all those things. It's often the same guy who's the captain of the basketball team, who holds himself in a certain way, who people look to as a role model, who the girls are also drawn to, who does well in school. And you sit next to the guys in base medrash, and you're struggling to like read three lines in Tosfos, and this guy's on top of like every question, and guys that you're the sort of same age of are now like 10 times beyond you in learning. And the guy next to you in college who gets offers for this financial house or gets into law at this law school or does well in MCAS. And, you know, I'm sort of going through life like, you know, sort of these lingering feelings of inadequacy, lingering feelings of insecurity. Something, if you want to find the most beautiful description on this topic, it's not something which is discussed by the Rishonim so much, but it's more by the Balei Musar, and especially Rav Volbi. Remember learning the Ali Shur Chelek Aleph? It's something that every person should learn at some stage of their life. I think I said the same thing last year after Pesach, but everyone should learn the Ali Shur throughout their life. He has a beautiful letter really addressing a Talmud who just feels like I'm nowhere. I'm nowhere in my learning. I'm nowhere in life. I don't know where my future is. It's a debilitating feeling, and sometimes it's a feeling that people don't get beyond. And I really just ask all of you just to really take time in your life to really identify what your kofos are. You know, the people in the life who will get the jobs in financial homes, but do they have the same generosity of spirit that you might have? Are they going to be the same amazing father that you might have? Are they the same dedicated friend? Are they the same person that would go to the end of the world to help a poor person? Are they somebody that has the same she'ifa or love of yadus or life? And probably every person who's feeling those feelings of inadequacy, if you would sort of step back from those feelings, you could identify like 50 things about yourself that are just amazing, that other people value, that other people see in you, that other people recognize, but you're so busy not recognizing them in yourself. And to take that time, take the opportunity to sort of see yourself through clear eyes, other people's eyes, and not just through the insecure eyes of yourself. And also to recognize, as I said, that as life plays out, you know, sometimes the guy who's in school, who's the 98 average, and who girls like, I mean, keep going back to this, but it's definitely an issue at this stage of life, popularity and social popularity, you know, it's often not that guy who often struggles, the guy who goes through ups and downs in life, and you're maybe the guy who's more, you know, not outstanding, but you're just a very decent person, and just life gives you opportunities, and you're a great husband, and you participate in the community, like life sometimes can be more generous to people like that instead of the people that were always riding like a high wave through their adolescence and early 20s. But to really focus on who am I, what are the beautiful kofos that Kadosh Baruch Hu has given me. That's number one. Number two, there's a really, really, really significant issue. It probably does affect a lot of you. I know enough of you to know that so many of you come from like amazing families, parents who are together, relations with siblings, a childhood that was pretty rosy, although like a rosy childhood has like its own challenges. Sometimes you grow up and, you know, great parents, great home, life was good. You know, you don't really exactly know how to handle life when life all of a sudden, if I was a teenager, I would say S-U-C-K-S, but those are sort of like the connotation. I mean, when life just sort of throws you like 8,000 curveballs and your marriage is struggling and, you know, your kid is off the derrick and your kids are fighting with each other and the jobs aren't working out. I mean, obviously you always daven to have like a great home and a great family, a great childhood, but, you know, those people are not always well-equipped how to handle the 8,000 curveballs that life throws you. And sometimes the person who went through tremendous trauma in their life, an awful divorce, their mother's an alcoholic. I mean, by the way, for those of you who think that these are not like mice in the poyom, I mean, like every day this institution, you know, a guy tells me his mother's a drug addict, she's broken to the neighbor's house. I mean, just like, you know, if you guys have a wonderful home life, you should be thankful for such. But sometimes it's the person who went through a lot as a kid, you know, who went through trauma as a kid, that went through ups and downs, that struggled in school, that went through family issues. Sometimes it's that person, if they learn how to deal with it properly, that person often is in a good position to really use that as a source of strength in their future. It's a beautiful comment by Rav Kook. And Rav Kook says that why is there the mitzvah of, in Bikurim, why is Dafa talk about simcha when it comes to Bikurim? So the obvious answer is, Bikurim is your first fruit. You come to Yerushalayim, you're excited. It's like your first bonus in your job. It's like your first raise, your first raise. Of course you're excited. But if Cook said it's so much more than that, and I hope you guys are sensitive to this point. If Cook says the person when they bring Bikurim, it's like stands, these are my words, not his, sort of stands like on a mountaintop and they look back on their life. And they say, Arami Ovid Avi, look where my grandparents came from, and look where my father came from, and look where I came from. And I came into Eretz Yisrael, I had nothing, and I planted a field, and I brought this to Yerushalayim. Like, genuine simcha is being able to look back in your life and feel that the steps of your life are in peace with each other. Feel that you can look back and feel benachas about where you've come from. And if you're a person that can't do that, you haven't resolved issues with your mother or with your father or with siblings or with your childhood, there's lingering feelings of anger, there's lingering feelings of insecurity because of childhood, there's lingering whatever it is, and that like stays with you and runs after you and becomes like a part of your life, your whole life. And a person who's a Baal Simcha can say, like, I look back on my history and I'm at peace with it. I'm at peace with who I am and where I've come from and my relationships. I've accepted the inadequacies of my parents, if that was the case. And I've accepted, and now I feel strengthened because of that. And a person who can't do that, they can't sort of look back on their life, so they're really missing that element of simcha. Then you have people that just like run. They like run and run and run away from themselves and their life. And it just, you know, you run until you fall off a cliff and your marriage falls apart. And so those are the first two things. Simcha that comes through feeling confidence in yourself, feeling that you love yourself. Simcha that comes from being benachas with your childhood. Of course, you know, the pasuk that tells us, Pasuk in Kisavo that says, "If days are punished, Tachas Hashem lo vadato Hashem lekacha b'simcha v'tuv leivav, because you didn't worship me b'simcha and with gladness." And Rav Soloveitchik says, "What simcha? Simcha is to be lifnei Hashem, to feel one with your relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, with God." And I think every person who's around this room, and probably every person, I should say every person living, because the world is in such like a weird place. I know this is like a side note, but like we live, even all of you that went to SAR, MTA, Hank, you know, JAC. I'm sorry, that's to the public, though, JAC, but TABC, on and on and on, and all of you have either maybe smoked marijuana in your life, seen marijuana in your life, been around the environment we're around. We know, obviously, that's not a clean environment. If you just, like, have a sense of what goes on in the world around us and, like, the hundreds of thousands of, like, heroin addicts in the country nowadays, and millions, not hundreds of thousands, and what the average kid is, like, experiencing 16 years old in private schools and public schools, I mean, you sort of feel, like, grateful for the life that we have. So I can't say that the whole world experienced this, but I think the whole world that we live in, or most of the world that we live in, understands, and that's why you're here, that probably your truest moment of happiness came when you felt, like, spiritually whole. Whatever those moments were, you know, sitting on a balcony in the Tivarie or in Reshit or somewhere, and just, you know, after an Ela, walking down the street as, like, the weather changes. It's one of the many things. Michelle, Svi and I have the exclusive living in Muncie. It's one of the many things that I love about living in where I live in Muncie and Wesley Hills. Like, it's sort of like, it's like a beautiful area. You can feel very much at one with God, at one with nature. And I would imagine it's fair to say that there is a decent percentage of people in this room, in the Beis Medrash, that do not feel at peace with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And probably that's probably true for one of many reasons. Reason number one is that, you know, it's exhausting to be, like, a committed Jew, and how to bring yourself to a Beis Medrash day after day, and how to invest in davening, and how to sit there and really feel that you're being omer b'nei Hashem, and how to feel that your soul connects to God. And I mean, it's a challenge. And if you're not feeling that, you're just sort of, like, going through the motions. And I'm not davening, and I'm putting on tefillin, and I'm learning, but I'm not really there. I'm not really present. And that's, like, very, like, depressing. It's very lonely. It's very alone. Like, I'm there, I'm involved, but I'm not really, like, what do you say? I'm, like, I'm not in the zone. I'm not, like, totally there. And we sort of need to, like, almost force ourselves to give ourselves those opportunities to really, and this is what I do, and everyone's different. Sometimes, like, be davening Ma'ariv and just close my eyes and just feel that my body has, like, faded away, and that's all that's left is my soul and my connection to God. And but that's, like, an investment. It's an investment to sit in your apartment or in your Beis Medrash late at night when everyone's left, and sit with the Sefer and just feel that, like, connection with God through learning or through other times. But if you don't do that, you go through your whole life with that feeling of disconnect. That may be one area that leads to, like, a religious loneliness. And if I can be open and honest, probably another area is that many of you, many of us, are living, like, double lives. You know, we see ourselves as B'nai Yeshiva, but then either on our iPhones or computers or other areas, you know, we allow this sort of incredibly base side of ourselves to take over, and that's become something that, you know, whether it be multiple times a day or a week or a month, like, a whole other side of ourselves that we feel we're not in control in. And this sort of sense of depression that creates, of here it is, I'm being omer b'nei Hashem, but I have, like, this other uncontrollable side of myself. You know, and unless we sort of, like, make ourselves, like, whole with ourselves, like, there's an emptiness. I'll tell you, I should say it's like a funny thing, but the world is, like, so much more challenging in this area than it used to be. I mean, it used to be, like, and again, I hope it's not crude to speak about this, but, you know, Taiva is as old as man himself. And if you go through the Gemara, it's about even the challenges that Tanayim and Amorayim had in the world of Taiva. You know, it was, like, almost unbearable. You know, the Gemara is to tell us that the Amorayim would say that if your Yetzirah is so strong, put on black clothing and go to a dark alley. And, I mean, it's Machlokes Rishonim what that means. But, you know, and then 20, 30 years ago, these are my friends. I grew up in Baltimore, so my friends from Near Israel would tell me this. They would do sweeps in the dormitory, and they would look under the mattresses for, you know, magazines. But and it was still there. But imagine the avoda for a guy from Near Israel you know, finding a magazine and hiding it under his mattress and hiding it from his roommate. I mean, it's just like, you know, the effort that it would took, but the effort was still made, but it was still like in Bismanenu, it's like the whole idea of life, according to the Ramchal, is that we are made up of equal parts, Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara, and we're placed in a world of equal opportunities for good and for bad, and we're supposed to create, like, Bidom Elokim, but is it really true that we're in a world that equally lends itself towards Ra and Tov? Is that the nature of our world? We're constantly fighting this uphill battle. So as I say, it's almost like funny. There was a few guys in YU, they used to call in to like the Guard Your Eyes. Guard Your Eyes, I'm sure most of you guys know what it is. And they would have like hotlines you would call in. And then one guy living on the second floor of Moore 4 years ago heard that the guy talking on the hotline was the guy in the room next to him on the second floor of Moore. So they're calling up a national hotline, and the guy who's speaking and the guy who's listening are next door neighbors in Moore. So they went to each other the next day. So I'm so embarrassed to tell you this, but I was also on this call last night. And maybe we should organize something in YU, like a group to meet every day, which I used to do in my office. And because I just say that just because unless we feel that we're coming shulling with ourselves in that area, and hosts of other areas, and our connection to God. So we missed that. We missed that Lifnei Hashem. And without Lifnei Hashem, there's no real simcha. There's no real happiness. This is the third area. There's two other areas, and then we'll be on our way. You know, the fourth area, something that Rav Hirsch discusses so beautifully. He says this in about four places. Can we think of what... anybody know where the Torah talks about simcha? I mean, certain places are obvious. Anybody know? By Sukkot, by Yontiv, by Bikurim, by Achilas Meiser Yushalayim. Rav Hirsch says that the commonality of all these things is that it's something that's shared by the community, by families, by groups of people. He says Simcha is never ever experienced when you're by yourself. I don't know if I agree with that. Some of my happiest moments are, I don't know if Aryeh or David used to be here. I used to love, after night seder, I'd go up on the roof of the, I used to live in Mas, I'd go up on the roof of the MTA building. Back then I had something called, which you guys never heard before, a Walkman. You know what that Walkman is? I can like take out old pictures and, you know. So put on my Walkman and my tape, if you guys know what that is. And so I sit up like 2 a.m. on a beautiful spring night on top of the roof here. I think if you try now, I think you'll get summarily arrested by the Burns Hevra, but some of your happiest moments often are like by yourself and just contemplating. But if you do that too much, you'll be depressed. Like that's really good for like an hour or 2 hours. Maybe you spend too much time on yourself. That's not usually a good thing. So Rav Hirsch describes that just the simcha of life comes through connections. And I'm sure all of you know this. You know, but just... there's no real happiness in life unless a person really felt I have close friends, so I have a relation with my family, I have children I'm close to. And it's almost that if, let's say, you have life, and you have, okay, I'm good at my job, and maybe I'm good in learning, and maybe I do this, and I'm a good athlete, but like, the inner core of your life is not there. It's like a beautiful, shiny apple, but the inner core of it is just, you know, decayed. Unless we really feel like we have like great relations with siblings and close friends and that we're a good friend and that's the priority of our life. And part of that is living life. And I know really, I think all of you pretty well. And even if you think that we just met, I have a pretty good sense for all of you. I think something that really is outstanding about the chevra of guys in this room is that all of you in your own way, there's like a real generosity of spirit. There's like a real goodness. Not just from the fact that most of you have worked in Hask, or most of you have done this, or Yachad, but just, I think all of you recognize at age 20, 21, that you're happiest in life, like when you're just giving, and you're doing, and like you're living for other people, and like you're thinking about, how can I give to this person? And I know it's such an obvious point, but if you go through your life, just always thinking of, where is there somebody in the world that I can help? You know, one of the great things about being in the Rabbanus, I'm not sure if any of you are thinking about it, but it's really just the most amazing, amazing field, is just the opportunities it gives you to visit know, your congregant's old mother sitting by herself in her house in Queens, or going to a hospital, or calling someone when they're having a hard time, or being there for a person when they're lost their job, and people say, Rabbi, you know, you're blah, 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 blah. And I say, like, I'm the luckiest person, because I get to live a life of just, you know, being there for people, or giving to other people. You know, when the Tefillah says, Chol Misha Osei B'Tzarchei Tzibur Be'munam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, etc., etc., V'yaster Mehem Kol Machala. If you're involved in the Tzibur, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take away all your machalos, all your illnesses. I mean, is that true? I mean, I think the pshat is that when you're really giving to the Tzibur, and you're really giving, and you're giving to your family, and you're giving to your kids, and to your friends, and you're that type of person, of generosity of spirit, like, you view the world differently. Like, not everything's a machala. Not everything is like, oh, I have this test, and blah, 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 and I'm angry, and I'm negative, and I have this thing, and blah, I hate this. It's like, you know, people like that, it's like the worst. I can't be around people like that. Like, this cancerous negativity. But when you're, like, giving, and you're open to people, and you love people, you're connected to people, it's just like your whole perspective on life is like a perspective of simcha, it's a perspective of optimism, it's a perspective of being upbeat. I mean, we just ask one thing of all of you as you start thinking in the next couple of years of where am I going to work, what am I going to do. Like, sometimes those things, like, rob you of sort of generosity of spirit. I'm so worried about getting my job, I'm so worried about buying a house, I'm so worried about this. Like my first worry should be, like, am I giving, and am I generous, am I helping, am I there for people? And, like, you live that type of life, that's a life of complete simcha. That's what Rav Hirsch was talking about. And lastly, I just want to say, as far as the last element of simcha, the Bali Musar, they discuss that when Paro made the Jews work Avodas Parech. How do you find that, Avodas Parech, in Parshas Shmos? It's like mindless labor, backbreaking labor, labor that has no meaning. And what the Bali Musar, they say, so Paro realized, is that, okay, I want you to go ahead and just take these 1,000 bricks and just build a wall, and then build another wall, and then build another wall, and wake up at 5 in the morning, and, like, you break a person's spirit, and you think, you make a person feel their life has no meaning, like, they're gone. There's nothing left of them. They're like an empty shell. And I really want to encourage all of you to spend a life, I know this sounds idiotic, and I know many of your parents are pushing you, okay, you know, you have to get an internship this summer, and please, please make sure that I'm never, like, that parent, you know what I mean? I'm sure your parents are great, but get the internship, and make sure you get a job right away, and do this right away, and blah, 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 and, like, and then you're on, like, this treadmill of, like, 50 years of working with an accounting firm, and, you know, no offense to accountants, and then just, like, and I'm not saying you can't have meaning in that life, but you have to, like, make that life meaningful somehow. Especially it's easier if you live out of town, you don't have to work like 15 hours a day. But, like, to ask yourself now, like, how can I have a life of meaning? And for many of you, I would hope the answer is that I find a career that really speaks to what my strengths are. You know, the happiest people in the world, and I consider myself one of the happiest people that I know, is where you feel that, like, who you are as a person is, like, what you spend your life doing. As opposed to, like, who I am as a person is over here, but, like, my life is, like, somewhere over there, and, like, there's, like, this huge gap between, you know, who I am and what I do. And so for many of you, that won't be the case. For many of you, you'll be actuaries, which is a great profession, or accountants, or lawyers, but, like, how to infuse that life with meaning, how to infuse days with meaning, how to view your life of learning as having, like, value, how to view what you're doing in the afternoon as having meaning, which even if you don't love the classes, like, there's still meaning there. You know, I'm working myself, I'm becoming more disciplined, I'm learning how to budget my time, I'm learning how to work, I'm learning how to be more of a mensch, I know how to interact with people that are different than I am. I mean, there's meaning in everything. There's meaning in every moment of life if a person looks for it and a person is receptive to it. So I want to give you guys a bracha that I hope all these five things spoke to you on some level. Number one, really learning to love yourself, to try to not be dragged down by feelings of insecurity, of inadequacy. And number two, to make peace with your life and your history. Number three, to be people who are omei lifnei Hashem and to feel that you're whole as people. Number four, to be people that are truly connected to family, friends, community, that your life is a life of generosity. And number five, that you really seek meaning both every day, every moment, but just the totality of your life. Of what's going to be the mark that you leave? What's going to be the life that you leave that you look back at age 85 and 90 and say, you know what, this was the life that I wanted. This was the life that I dreamed of having. And just to set that as like a mind's goal. You do all those things. You try to perfect all those things. It's a life of just an overflowing sense of simcha, an overflowing sense of shefa, an overflowing sense of meaning. And again, I give you guys a tremendous bracha that you're able to, if not be there already, certainly be on the way to reaching that. And if myself, Rav Moshe Tzvi, Rabbi Belzon, Rabbi Schachter, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, anybody here can help at all in any capacity. We love you guys and want to only see your success in the future. Thank you guys.